Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast.
Coming to you from the Baseball America Podcast nook.
Controls, you're throwing strikes. The command is you're hitting the spot.
That's stupid. I'm sorry. I'm going to rant about this again because that's just stupid, John.
This is
so ridiculous. I'm tired of it.
If he was in the home run derby, I'd put him out of a decent chance of winning it against the big leaguers.
Surprised you could even hear us over the din of Ronnie McCabe's tape gun.
Here we go in 3, 2, 1. Play ball.
Welcome to another Baseball America College podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. This podcast is powered by Louisville Slugger. Leave your mark with the attack, raid, and assault bat lineup this season. Stronger, lighter, farther, Louisville Slugger. And Aaron, we also need to remind people that this is draft season, of course. Aaron, how draft season is it at Baseball America this time of year?
Oh man, it's all consuming, isn't it, John? It's hard to do anything else. Got the college season winding down. I'm trying to multitask here, but the draft is a bear.
It is all-consuming is the word, so we want to remind people that Baseball America's draft offer is available now. Subscribe now and receive one extra month of access with any premium content subscription, all of our scouting reports for the draft, the entire BA 500 behind that premium content wall. So go to baseballamerica.com/subscribe and join us now. So great time of year to follow baseball and to follow baseball from the Baseball America perspective, Aaron, which is where we follow the draft. We're looking to see what players are future stars, but we also care who wins in college baseball. It's the only time where we care who wins. And, Aaron, Virginia did not win this weekend. For the first time this season, Cavaliers did not win a weekend series. They lost at Wake Forest. So we have a new number one. We will go into we aren't in the postseason yet. We're in conference tournament season for most teams, but not for the teams out west. So Oregon State, one last regular season series for the Beavers, and they go into that final regular season series number one in our rankings. But, Aaron, I'm not going to say they're number one in our hearts because the Beavers suspend Ben Wetzler for 5 games for being arrested for kind of basically a disorderly conduct charge, right? He broke into a house that was a friend's house or something like that. Am I remembering that correctly off the top of my head?
It sounds like I think he might have thought it was his own house that he was breaking into. It was, late at night and intoxicated and broke into a house that didn't belong to him. That's all I know.
Well, Ben Wetzler was suspended for 5 games for this, but that basically means that he didn't miss the entire Washington series. So in a very crucial game between the top two teams in the Pac-12, instead of missing that series, Ben Wetzler pitches on Sunday after the 5 games with a retroactive date put on that suspension, by the way. So he pitches in the finale of that series, and of course he wins because Ben Wetzler's really good as a college pitcher. Throws a CG2 hitter with 9 strikeouts. He's now 10-1. His ERA is under 1. And Aaron, in part because of Ben Wetzler, Oregon State, in my mind, is the best team in the country. They're number one in our rankings. But I got to tell you, Aaron, this suspension and the way they handled the Ben Wetzler situation stinks. It's the second time I could remember an Oregon State player being arrested and really serving no time, no suspension, not being any consequences because of it. It happened with Mike Lisman back in 2007 when he stole almost $8,000 from a relative and really didn't miss any playing time. And now it happens. Ben Wetzler, a much less significant transgression. But this is a senior, Aaron, and a team leader and all this kind of stuff. And I'll tell you, their praise of Ben Wetzler rings pretty hollow. And I thought, what a fine young man he is and all that stuff. Well, a senior 22-year-old has to have better judgment than that, Aaron. I'm pretty disappointed with the way Oregon State handled this. And I think it reflects poorly on them. And it's another one that's going to kind of hang over this team when they're in a playoff, a postseason run. And I'm sure they're not going to address it when Pat Casey faces media, because it seems like he's pretty effective at brushing this stuff aside with the media in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, he controls the media up there. I mean, you know, it seems like I noticed it, and I'll say it because I hadn't talked about this before publicly, but I found it pretty interesting that, you know, when he addresses the media, he talks for, you know, a minute and answers two or three questions, and then abruptly says, "Okay, that's it." And I've never seen any other coach in college baseball do that. And certainly, you know, when there's a difficult situation like this, you know, they handle it the way they want to handle it. They control the message the entire way, and this is what they're going to say about it. They issue their statement, and that's going to be the end of it. They're not going to talk about it again. This is the end of it. And you know what? It's, you know, I don't want to blow it out of proportion because it's, you know, college kids are still college. He's 22, but, you know, it's a drunken, stupid thing to do. I mean, like, it's not like there's not a malicious intent here, but I mean, that said, like you said, he is a team leader, and they emphasized that in their statement and said, well,
absolutely.
You know, I mean, we choose to judge Ben Wetzler by his 1300 days in the program rather than just by one night. Well, that's fine. I mean, I get it. You don't want to like write the kid off or kick him off the team. That's fine. I don't think he deserves to be kicked off the team. But if you say then that you follow that up immediately by saying, well, we would be disappointed in ourselves, and I think Ben would be disappointed in us if we didn't hold him to a higher standard. Well, then hold him to a higher standard. I mean,
exactly.
Suspend him for the weekend. I don't think that's asking too much. I think if you were serious about sending a message and holding your senior leader accountable, you would suspend him for the weekend. And if you lose the series, so be it.
That's exactly right. You said it exactly the right way. If you're going to hold him to this higher standard as they have, then prove it. Put some teeth behind that suspension. It was toothless. It reflects poorly on Pat Casey. It reflects poorly on the Oregon State Beavers. And it makes the rest of the team suffer consequences for Ben Wetzler's stupidity and the coaches, the coaching staff, not really having the guts to have a suspension with more teeth. This is a great team, Aaron. This is a complete college baseball team. And the rest of these players don't deserve to have this crap hanging over their heads, but it will be the rest of the year because of Pat Casey, period.
You know,
he should have held his own player to a higher standard. Instead, he put the expediency of winning this UW series over the interest of the rest of his players. I thought it was weak.
It's strong, John, but I think you're right. Ultimately, I think that they could have put this to bed if they suspended him for the weekend.
That's
and again,
all I'm
that's
saying. They could have put it to bed. Nobody would have said much of anything. And again, like you said, not much deserves to be said about it. He's 22 and he got drunk. That is his right as an American. You know, I'm right there with Ben Wetzler of being 22 and getting your swerve on. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that as long as you don't hurt anybody else. You know, don't get behind the wheel of a car. Don't operate heavy machinery. You know, don't go out there and throw your 88-mile-an-hour fastball when you're drunk. But the way that it's handled is, hey, the cover-up's always worse than the crime. There's no cover-up here, but the way they handled it is worse because their senior leader didn't really suffer any consequences. And now he basically brings all that on the rest of the team, in my mind, because you just have to wonder why they had such a toothless punishment. But Aaron, boy, Ben Wetzler's good. I mean, you have a senior left-hander with an 0.84 ERA with Wetzler and Fry and the Moore. They're the best team in the country, aren't they?
You know, I mean, it's them or probably Virginia. I'm still not ready to say they're better than Virginia. I'm not. I mean, I just think Virginia is better in the bullpen, and to me, that's the difference. And you know, I think they're both balanced teams. Virginia has more experience in the lineup. They're less reliant upon freshmen at key spots. You know, those. You know, Logan Ice is a good player, and he's come up big for him. He's had a nice year behind the plate, but still a freshman catcher.
Right.
And you know, it's a freshman shortstop. Virginia has a freshman shortstop too. They both have pretty special defenders at short. Pinero's better offensively, you know, and then third base now, Oregon State's got a freshman there too. So I just think that's a difference to me is Virginia's a little more experienced and I trust their bullpen more. So I'd still take the Cavs. The Cavs didn't have a good weekend, but, you know, Oregon State's right there with them. I think it's 1A and 1B in some order.
Not like we're second guessing the Cavaliers here at all, Aaron, but I'm just surprised with the way their offense has gone this year. And we haven't seen a little bit more Nick Howard offensively, although I guess he's played a little bit more lately. And then we haven't seen more John LaPrice. I mean, this, you know, John LaPrice can hit. I know Pinheiro and Cogswell are really good defensively. Those guys have 12 extra base hits between them. They do have high OBPs, but I'm just a little bit surprised we haven't seen LaPrice a little bit more. He's got, you know, less playing time, and he's not an overly physical guy. He's got 10 extra base hits. He's almost got as many extra base hits himself as those two guys have. I'm second-guessing here, and I really probably shouldn't. Brian O'Connor definitely knows his team better than I do. But are you surprised that they're – I mean, we talk about their offense all year, and it is what it is. It's not what it was supposed to be on paper. It's a mediocre offense. Yeah. It's not a great offense.
You're right. You know, and I can't figure out why that is when I look at the personnel. But, yeah, they you know, the proof is in the pudding at this point. You're right. They are who they are. And I don't know. I mean, I like the depth, though. I like the fact that they can mix and match. And, you know, if somebody is struggling or they need a big at-bat off the bench, I mean, they've got a lot of guys that they can do that I still think are talented. But you're right. I mean, at this point, you know, they're not world beaters offensively. You know, neither is Oregon State. And I still feel like both these teams have a couple of guys in the middle, you know, or in Virginia's case, Pappy, I think, was leading off some. And but, you know, with Pappy and McCarthy and Fisher, I mean, these guys are impact guys, just like Conforto and Davis are. I mean, Conforto and Davis probably have had better years than Virginia's big guys, except for maybe Pappy. But, you know, they both have a little bit of firepower in the middle. But neither of these teams are Louisiana Lafayette offensively.
That's the other rub. Louisiana Lafayette now number two in our rankings. I mean, you know, Oregon State's got to go play its last four games on the road at Oregon and at USC over the weekend. If Oregon State loses a couple of those games, they lose a weekend series, and Lafayette wins the Sun Belt Conference tournament, Aaron, couldn't you see Lafayette entering the NCAA tournament as our number one? And do you think they'll be a top eight national seed?
Yes, I do. You know, and there are flaws in they're certainly in their case. I mean, they don't have they don't have very many top 50 wins. I mean, that's just a fact. I mean, you know, the committee will look at that and that'll weigh against them. They're 3-1 against the top 50. They're only 7-3 against the top 100. So, I mean, they're
37th in the RPI right now. The NCAA actually did release its official RPI this morning on May 19th.
Good.
We have an official RPI with Virginia 1, Florida 2, Florida State, Indiana, Oregon State, Vanderbilt, Lafayette, South Carolina. That's your top eight in the RPI, Aaron. So let's just go point by point there. Virginia, barring a collapse. Well, Virginia, they're a lock to be a top eight national
seed.
Don't you feel?
Yes.
Lock top eight. Florida's a lock top eight.
Yes.
Florida State, is Florida State a lock top eight national seed? It doesn't feel like they're a lock. Am I wrong there?
Boy. You know, I still wonder because Miami won the conference.
Yeah.
You know, I could see if they only want to give the ACC two national seeds, I could see Miami squeezing out Florida State. If you know, let's say Florida State falls on its face in the conference tournament and Miami stays hot. I mean, right now it feels like both those teams are probably going to be national seeds. But, you know, the top five team, if Florida State finishes in the top five, they're going to be a national seed. That's you can pretty much take that to the bank.
I think they're most likely, but I don't feel like they're a lock. Like, I do feel Indiana is a lock. For a Big Ten team to be number four in the RPI, I feel like they're a lock. Don't you think so?
No, I agree. And certainly Oregon State is as well. Now, back to Louisiana Lafayette. I mean, we talk about the lack of really high impact wins here. I mean, that's the flaw. They're only 35-3 against teams 101-200. So that's where they really.
The ointment, Aaron.
But that said, with that kind of a schedule, to be seventh in the RPI is not easy to do. So I think the committee will reward them for being 49-7 in the regular season. I mean, that's incredible. Before we even get to the conference tournament, they got 49 wins. You know, they have the one series win against Alabama that they're kind of hanging their hats on a little bit, and in their domination of the league. And I bet you this is one of those deals where the regional advisory committee will say, hey, these guys are for real. You know, I mean, their talent is legit. That's one of those where that could probably, you know, I assume that's what the regional advisory committee will say, because anyone who sees this team, I think, would probably get that impression. I think they're legit.
All the scouts I've talked to, you know, they're no high-end draft guys for this year's draft. Like Trahan, the shortstop, will probably be a high-end guy for next year's draft. There's some single-digit possibilities this year. Baranek, Robichaux, Caleb Adams, maybe Harrison on the outfield. Maybe some, you know. So there are four guys who are kind of in that 6 to 12 round range, Aaron, talent-wise. I may even be selling somebody short. Maybe Greg Milhorn's in that range for somebody else. So Lafayette does have depth of talent. So a lot of scouts have seen them that we've talked to. So they're talented, but I don't think anyone thinks they have, you know, otherworldly talent. But everyone I've talked to at the same time thinks this is a really, really good college baseball team.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I think as long as they don't go 0-2 in the conference tournament, you know, or 1-2, let's say they win at least a couple of games. I mean, I don't even think they necessarily have to win the conference tournament to be a national seed. It would help, you know, because there's thick competition here for these national seeds. I mean,
exactly.
You got those three ACC teams that all are very strong. And then you got three SEC teams with Florida, I think South Carolina now, and Ole Miss after winning the West. Ole Miss is down to 13 in the RPI. They didn't have to play Vanderbilt or Florida, so they had probably an easier SEC schedule than South Carolina and Vanderbilt had. So that's a factor. It's an unbalanced schedule, so you can't just look at the standings. But and then Vanderbilt, I think, probably is on the outside of that mix after losing that series to South Carolina. But if they make a deep run in Hoover, I mean, they're 6 in the RPI. It's not like they're far out of the mix here. So so you got 3 or 4 SEC teams in the mix. Houston and Rice are inside the top 10 in the RPI, but I don't think they're national seed contenders just because I don't think the rest of the metrics are there for them. But and you got the Beavers in Indiana that we both think are probably locks. So they're, you know, you got a pretty healthy group of contenders here. If you need to make room for somebody, you know, if somebody stumbles in the conference tournament, that could still cost you.
Aaron, I was talking to a cross-checker just now who said that he believes the conference tournaments are going to matter more for the first round of the draft than he could ever remember. Like there's a razor thin difference for a lot of these prospects that how they finish in these conference tournaments is going to matter. And it feels like that he was talking about the draft, but as he was saying that and I was typing, I was like, you know, that's probably true for these teams as well. And I really thought about it in the Southeastern Conference tournament, which you're still going to be appending, right? Some of these come up. I understand we don't need to go into that for everybody listening, but you're still planning to go to Hoover for part of that tournament, correct?
Yeah, I had to change my plans a little bit, but yeah, I'll be there on Wednesday. I'll catch probably the second two games on Wednesday and then all day Thursday and Friday.
Let's talk a little bit about that tournament and what it means for each of these clubs, because as we just talked about a little bit, Aaron, well, first of all, it means it's Tennessee has to win some games here to get into regionals. Don't we think so?
I think that's probably the case, yeah. I mean, although,
does Georgia down at they're the 12 seed. Georgia's at 55. We don't believe Georgia's going to regionals, correct?
I don't think so. But let me go back for a second to Tennessee because
right. I was going to set you back up for Tennessee because Tennessee's 31-22 overall. They're the 11th seed in the Southeastern Conference. But that doesn't mean they don't have a good regional case, right?
John, I like their case better than Clemson's, you know, if you're looking at two teams that are in a similar spot in the RPI.
And both wear a lot of orange.
Both wear a lot of orange. Clemson is down to 51 in the latest official RPI. You know, that's a team that needs to do some work in the conference tournament. You know, even North Carolina, 44, one spot ahead of Tennessee. I like Tennessee's resume more than North Carolina's. I mean, you got series wins, at Arizona State against UNLV. I mean, they played some good Western teams that are going to regionals and beat them. You know, I know that they
– Florida, they have a win. You know, they have a series win against Kentucky in the league. You know, they haven't gotten swept very often, correct, Aaron? I mean, they didn't get swept by Vanderbilt. They won the Vanderbilt series. What am I talking about?
Yeah, that's right.
They were swept by South Carolina. Feels like in league play, otherwise, they've been quite competitive. I guess that's really that series against loss to Georgia you really look at, and you know, that's one that you probably needed to
and
have
Auburn too at home. Those are the two that hurt him. I mean, that's why – hey, 12 and 18 is usually not good enough. Sometimes I feel like we've seen teams at 12 and 18 in the SEC get in, but that's also in a smaller SEC where maybe you're talking about a ninth team in versus an 11th team. But that said, if you look at the totality of their body of work, I just think it's better than those ACC bubble teams. You could probably even throw Georgia Tech in the same mix, and I think I would take Tennessee over Georgia Tech.
I mean, like, just for example, North Carolina's body of work. Is the series win at Maryland, is that their best series win? I think that's their best series win.
I think you're right.
The other thing that North Carolina did is they have not been swept by Virginia, Miami, or Florida State.
Just Duke.
That's the weird one. A pretty eventful weekend. That North Carolina-Miami doubleheader on Friday. The first game of that was, what, a 16-inning game?
Yep.
That was a heck of a game. And it felt like there were a lot of those games all weekend there, and there was a lot of
– the same mix, and I think I would take Tennessee over Georgia Tech.
I mean, like, just for example, North Carolina's body of work. Is the series win at Maryland, is that their best series win? I think that's their best series win.
I think you're right.
The other thing that North Carolina did is they have not – been swept by Virginia, Miami, or Florida State.
Just Duke.
That's the weird one. A pretty eventful weekend. That North Carolina-Miami doubleheader on Friday. The first game of that was, what, a 16-inning game?
Yep.
That was a heck of a game. And it felt like there were a lot of those games all weekend there, and there was a lot of longish games. A lot of extra inning games. We'll talk about some of those, but I want to go back to the SEC brackets. So I'm with you. I feel like Tennessee's resume is unless they go 0-for in the tournament, you know, at some point you do have to win some games. Yep. They've won some games, but they've also lost a lot of games. So
yes,
Tennessee, a bubble team. That I agree with you. Their resume looks better than Clemson's, better than North Carolina's going into this week. Texas A&M, go ahead.
And sorry, John, Tennessee's got Vanderbilt coming up in the first game of the SEC tournament, right. Single elimination, season on the line here for the Vols, you know, against your rival. Go get them.
And they've already won 2 of 3 against that rival team, as you said, and that was in Knoxville, a little bit different. Texas A&M, Aaron, where's A&M on this bubble?
They're in.
They're definitely in.
I think they're no doubter. They got enough quality series wins. They're 33, like you said, in the RPI, and their conference record 14-16 in the SEC. Good enough.
So in your mind, the first 10 seeds of the SEC are solid in.
Yes.
And the Tennessee, in your mind, is bubble in at this point.
I have to do the math, but I think so. Yeah, I'm working on a stock report this afternoon, but I was just thinking, you know, in the last day or two here that I took a step back and compared them to those ACC teams, and I like Tennessee more, which tells me that I'm going to probably put them in.
Now, you had in the last stock report, you had Old Dominion in.
Yeah.
They're 37 in the RPI, North Carolina 44, Clemson 51, as you said. This bubble range here, and I mean, it really seems like it starts at – I would guess in the 31, where West Virginia's 31, but at 27 and 24, and with the arrow pointing down for the Mountaineers, they're the sixth seed in the Big 12 tournament.
They're out right now.
It sounds like they're out, right? They've really slumped here the last couple weeks of the season.
They lost their last, what, 7 games, I think, in the regular season. You know, all they had to do, in my opinion, was not get swept in those 2 weekends, and they couldn't win one game in either weekend.
At Kansas and at Texas Tech. Yeah. The road was a very difficult road for West Virginia to have to finish with 7 games on the road, all against regional teams. It sounds like Maryland's in, you know. But tough. It was a tough road for West Virginia. They just couldn't pull 1 or 2 wins out in that stretch.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, because of their RPI, I thought they didn't have to do a whole lot in order to get in, but they didn't do it. They didn't do the bare minimum. So, I mean, you know, they're still alive because the RPI, if they go to the conference tournament, you know, make a deep run, okay, maybe they're back in. But right now they're out.
Okay. So I'm just working down this RPI. Sam Houston State at 32, Dallas Baptist at 34th. Those teams do not win their conference tournaments. Are they in? It feels like Dallas Baptist is more on the bubble out. Is that correct?
Sam Houston State's in. because they have a conference regular season championship under their belt, because they're 7-5 against the top 50. They've held their own against teams like, you know, Rice and Houston and Baylor and A&M and, you know, I think TCU also. I think they've beaten all those teams at least once.
And TBU played at Sam Houston State in non-conference. Sam Houston State won that series.
And Dallas Baptist, the thing that hurts them is 2-9 against the top 50, and they didn't win their league. So that's one of those that you could see being a high RPI team that doesn't get in. I think they probably will. I think that'll be a three-bid league because, you know, at least they're – what are they, third in their league,
yeah,
I think?
Tied for second, actually.
Tied for second.
For the three seed, but they're tied for second with Indiana State behind Evansville.
Yeah, I mean they'll probably. I think they're probably got a better chance than West Virginia. If I'm looking at teams in this RPI range, I would put Dallas Baptist ahead.
In my mind, just they have that crucial series loss to Utah Valley at home. You know, a hard time getting past that. They have won their last three series against Missouri State, Wichita State, Southern Illinois. So they've closed fairly well. It feels like Dallas Baptist is going to be one of those teams. They're in that mix to be last four in, first four out, right?
I agree. I agree with you, yeah.
Arizona State at 35, they've certainly finished well. Feels like Arizona State's in.
They're
Kansas, Old Dominion. Now, Old Dominion at 37. I feel like we've talked a little bit about Old Dominion, but not a lot. Chris Finwood's gone over there. Where was he at? Western Kentucky before? Is that where he was?
Yeah. That's right. Did a great job, Western Kentucky. Got the Hilltoppers, I think, into a couple of regionals.
Yep, did a great job there. Now he's come to Old Dominion, which is kind of like his, you know, he's a Virginia guy. He's got a lot of Virginia ties. He's come to ODU. There's a pretty nice influx of junior college transfers that he's brought into Old Dominion as this program really geared up to get into Conference USA. I've talked to a couple scouts who really like the way that he runs that program and the way that that team scraps, and the talent level there is solid, not spectacular. But they've kind of taken on all comers. They've got this pretty nice bullpen, Aaron. And they've got a couple starters who've had a nice season for them. But I've heard some pretty good stuff on Connor Overton, like their setup guy out of the bullpen. Like he has some 94s on him. They have the Brad Jarrow kid who's had a great year for them. So it's a nice bullpen. They pitched pretty well. What's your take on – is their resume regional caliber? Their talent is on the fringe of regional caliber. What's your take on their resume as far as regional caliber?
It's one of those that feels a little bit inflated in the RPI, and I'm not quite sure why. You know, it's one of those because I don't see a ton of substance here. I mean, I do think, you know, they got a couple of nice series wins. East Carolina at home, that's an okay series win. They had a midweek win against Virginia that really helped them for sure. But, you know, they went to Rice, didn't get swept. They won one out of the three games up there. But, you know, They're 3-6 against the top 50, so you know they're not like Dallas Baptist. There's not a whole lot of high end wins to hang your hats on. But that said, kind of like Dallas Baptist, I'd probably lean toward in right now. They needed to do some work to get themselves into a better position in the conference, because a couple weeks ago they had been like sixth or seventh in that league. They finished tied for fourth at 17-13. Six games back of Rice, but still, I think that's probably good enough. I would lean toward in right now, but it's definitely a bubble case. I mean, a lot of these teams really are. It's funny how wide the bubble is from an RPI standpoint. I feel like a lot of years, you feel like every team inside the top 40 is safe. And this year,
I feel there's
a lot of teams inside the top 40 that are not safe, and there are teams in the 50 to 60 range that I think have a pretty good shot.
I felt like we were going to do a little Casey Kasem there with the weekly top 40. We're talking about top 40 teams. Casey Kasem in the news brings up the top 40 to me. Aaron, Irvine, I feel like it has put itself right back on the bubble. Swept by Cal State Fullerton. Irvine is next in this official RPI at 38, and they dropped 12 spots this week. Irvine feels like it's in trouble, Aaron, because it doesn't have a great series win to hang its hat on, does it?
Yeah.
Santa Barbara?
That's it. You're right. It's Santa Barbara. I think that's the correct answer. They've struggled when they stepped out of conference. I think they lost a series to, Nebraska. They lost a series to San Diego State. So they've got those that – they played those good – solid teams in other leagues, haven't fared well against them. Even Fresno State early in the season, they lost 2 out of 3 at home. That was opening weekend. It was a long time ago, but it still counts.
It's this year, yeah. It's these players.
That's right. So, they knew the schedule was backloaded. They, you know, Gillespie, when did I talk to him? After the Santa Barbara series, yeah. I think a couple of weeks ago. And even at that point, he wasn't counting his chickens. He said, look, you know, we understand, we are where we are because we had the friendlier part of our schedule early. And he said, you know, it won't be easy. And it hasn't been, you know, they took care of business against the Gauchos, lost the next two weekends against Pauley and Fullerton. And now they have to go to Long Beach, and Long Beach hasn't lost a series in a while. They're playing well. Long Beach is going to be in. Irvine, despite being better in the RPI right now, I don't know. They might be on the bubble.
Aaron, how much of their recent demise can be traced to the fact that they've treated their superfan Keith Franklin so shabbily in recent weeks? I mean, this is poor. I don't want to spend too much time talking about this, but Keith Franklin, you've written about him when you went to Irvine games, and they banned him from their home games this year for coming on the field to present a 1,000-win banner to Coach Gillespie. I mean, that just seems ridiculous. Now, the guy seems a little ridiculous himself. Like, don't come on the field, you know.
Right,
ask
right.
permission. That's certainly sensible, but it feels like a little bad karma coming the Eater's way for getting for shoving Keith Franklin out of their ballpark.
I got to tell you what, John. He's one of the most.
Not a Southern California thing for me to say, but it feels like they're in SoCal. I feel karma's a factor.
They are very lucky to have had that guy going to their games for years now, and he's one of the most recognizable fans in college baseball. He's one of the best fans in college baseball. He's kind of like, you know, our friend Tom Jensen at North Carolina. He's relentlessly positive. He never rides the other team. He's loud. Like Tom is. He's loud. He's into it. But he's a great fan. He loves the Anteaters. The players and their families, I'm pretty sure, love him as well because they paid to send him to the regional in Charlottesville several years back. And right. It sounds like the players' families are trying to get him back in the ballpark. But, I mean, that's – you know, look, tell the guy don't come on the field again, okay? I mean, give him a stern warning. He comes back to the next game and they wouldn't let him in. Give me a break, man. I don't know all the situation there, but I'm just saying bad karma is right. I mean, you should be – you know, you should be – thanking that guy every day for coming to your games and creating an atmosphere, because otherwise it's dead. I mean, that's the guy who creates all the energy in that ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, I read that this weekend. It just didn't make a whole lot of sense that they did it. It felt like it was a litany of things that built up to that. I don't want to talk too much about it, but to me, when I think of Irvine now, I think of this guy and his Macho Man Randy Savage impersonation cheering on the Eaters. Yeah. Oh, yeah! So... that was a pretty bad Macho Man Savage. I apologize. Doesn't mean I wasn't going to do it, and I didn't even warn you that I wasn't going to do it and then do it. So just that's what Aaron, Georgia Tech, we talked about them, very soft resume. It feels like Georgia Tech's best thing that it did was go to North Carolina and win that series, which was the only time I saw them play in person this year. And it was more like, they outfought North Carolina in a game on a Friday night. They outlasted North Carolina in a long extra inning game. I feel like that's been said a few times about the Tar Heels this year. And I guess they won that series against Miami back when Miami actually lost series back in March, which Miami's won a billion games in a row, it feels like. 26 out of 29, I believe, is Miami's deal. Yeah. But, I mean, Georgia Tech's resume, I guess they had some high highs and some low
Florida
lows.
State, too.
They won the Florida State series. That's right. They won series against Miami, against Florida State. I feel like, and they swept Duke. I feel like if you're in the committee room and you're saying, what didn't they do? They lost a series at NC State. They lost. They got swept at Pittsburgh. It's a very uneven resume for the Yellow Jackets. What's your gut feel on these guys?
In. I think they're in. And I know there's some Georgia Tech fans that are really worried. They think if they lose Tuesday, that they'll be out. But I don't think so. You know how I feel about high quality series wins, and they've got high end series wins with Florida State and Miami, and you know, they're both at home, but then they won the road series against North Carolina, and hey, sweeping Duke is actually a decent series. I know it's not a great RPI series because Duke's in the 70s, I think, in the RPI, but Duke's good, and they're 16-14 in the league. So for me, there's enough here. I mean, Georgia Tech, hey, they got to 14 wins in the league. It's not great, but it's usually good enough combined with a solid enough RPI and a bunch of high-end wins. For me, I like their resume more than Clemson and North Carolina.
And then you have this North Carolina NC State game tomorrow, Aaron, which is could be the third installment. Well, not third, it'd be like the sixth installment of Carlos Rodon versus North Carolina. It sounds like Carlos could pitch, probably won't start, but who knows? You know, last year in Omaha, Turner Walston, I guess, is the radio guy for North Carolina, who tweeted the story from last year in Omaha, where 30 minutes before the second game between North Carolina and NC State, an elimination game in Omaha, where Kevin Fosnes, the NC State media relations director, basically burst into the radio room and said, "Guys, we're starting Rodon," and then let him know, and then close the door. So I guess NC State changed its mind basically 30 to 45 minutes before that game started.
Right.
So what's your gut feel tell you, Aaron? Does your gut feel say that NC State and North Carolina, both of which are on the bubble, it feels like NC State has a little bit more work to do than North Carolina does. Where if North Carolina gets one or two, North Carolina gets a win in that Tuesday game, almost playing those next three games might be enough for North Carolina RPI wise. Although it certainly would behoove them to go 2-2 rather than 1-3.
Right.
Feels like NC State has to win Tuesday and then win a couple more games for sure to get in. What's your take on those two teams? It sounds like it sounds like you agree that North Carolina's got work to do. NC State has more work to do.
Exactly. I think you nailed it pretty well there.
North Carolina finished 44 in the RPI. NC State's at 54.
Yeah, and the Tar Heels have finished two games ahead in the conference standings too. They don't have as many bad losses as NC State has. I think for me, if I'm Elliott Avent, and I know I got to win multiple games in this tournament, it's more than just beating North Carolina. Just beating North Carolina is not good enough. I'm not going to bring back my ace on 3 days rest for that game. And especially since I think, Virginia and Florida State present bigger challenges than North Carolina. This isn't a great North Carolina team. If you're a regional team, beat them with somebody else. That's how I feel.
This year's North Carolina team that's just not an offensive team. I understand that last year's North Carolina team was really, really, really offensive. This year's team is not hot, Landon Lasseter notwithstanding. And then, Aaron, it feels like Duke has to win the tournament, and 15-15 in the league, and I feel like Duke is a better team than either North Carolina or NC State. Certainly better on the mound.
I think they're 16-14.
16-14, you're right. They are 16-14 in the league.
And teams that win 16 games in ACC always go to regionals. I mean, really, this would be – I can't think of the last time a team had a winning ACC record and didn't go to regionals. But that
sweep,
RPI –
sweep at Pittsburgh really feels like it's going to kill them,
And, they're still only, 5-13 against the top 50. So, they haven't done as well against the top-end teams. This week – in the last 2 weeks, I really thought they had to, not get swept by Miami – and not get swept by Florida State. And they did salvage a win at Florida State, but they got swept by Miami. So
their first win at Florida State in 14 years. First win at Tallahassee since 2000.
Oh, I thought it was since 1994. Is that wrong?
Oh, no, I think you're right. I think I got it wrong. I think you're right. Since 1994, that's insane, Aaron. That's truly insane when you really think about it, because that was the year that Duke had, Quentin McCracken and Ryan Jackson. And, I mean, that Duke team, Ryan Jackson was collegiate baseball's college player of the year, which was not a good choice. I believe ours was Nomar Garciaparra, it was Jason Veritek, who was a switch-hitting catcher and was the ACC player of the year, I believe. Ryan Jackson had a great year. I'm not dogging on Ryan Jackson. But Ryan Jackson had a really good year that year is what I'm trying to say. And, I wasn't at Baseball America at that time. I know that's hard for you to believe, Aaron, but I wasn't. There was a time when I wasn't at Baseball America. But it just feels like if Duke feels more like a regional team than North Carolina or NC State. But it feels like they're less likely to get in. Is that fair?
Yeah. I agree with you. Really, I do. Duke won those series against both those teams, which is really the high point of their resume. I mean, that's the problem for them is they don't have any series wins better than those two, and those two are bubble teams. But you watch them play; they look the part to me. I mean, I think they're much deeper on the mound than NC State and and deeper than North Carolina too on the mound, no doubt for me.
I don't even know if it's so much deeper, but they're better.
They're just better. You're right.
They're better. I'd say they both have like 7-8 guys they like, but I think Duke's 7-8 is better than North Carolina's. You know, I think both from my college standpoint and from my pro standpoint. I mean, Trent Swart's been outstanding down the stretch of the season, and that's with injuries to Marvel. And who was the other pitcher who got hurt for them? James Marvel was supposed to be their Friday guy.
Yeah,
Swart missed
right.
part of the season. Michael Mattiuella was banged up a little bit. I mean, certainly if he were healthy, he'd have thrown more than 52 innings. This is a deep pitching staff, but yeah, I think North Carolina has 7 guys they like. Duke has 7-8 guys it likes. I just think Duke's 7 or 8 are better. You know, I mean, it's a really good pitching staff, and there's some there's some offense in that. I think we thought that Chris Marcancini would have a better year. But Jordan Betts, Marcancini, Ryan Dietrich gives them some heft in the middle of the lineup. Andy Perez and Mark Lupa set the table fairly well. It feels like it should be a better offense than it's been, Aaron. It's weird the pieces don't quite add up for them.
Right.
I like their team. I like their team. I definitely think Chris Pollard has done a tremendous job there. And if Duke can hang on to him, they're going to have a really good program. We'll see.
Yeah,
I think his success is going to get noticed.
I think so, too. I think he's a great coach. I really do. And he has a very bright future. I think he's only 39.
A young guy. And he's a North Carolinian. He's been around the state for a long time. Had success at Appalachian State. He's good. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But to follow up on something you said there, you look at their parts, they don't quite add up to the results, and I feel the same way about Clemson. I mean, I look at Clemson, and they should be a lot better than they are. I don't know, some teams just underachieve, and I'm not gonna say Duke underachieved. I mean, winning 16 games for them was a big step forward, but they also had some bad. Even this weekend, they couldn't. That wasn't this weekend, but it was 2 weeks ago against Longwood when they didn't sweep that series.
Right, good point.
Buddy
Bowling was afoot in that series.
That's right.
I shouldn't say that. But Clemson, Aaron, this is a team that had those brutally just tough losses to South Carolina early. Felt like they got back up off the mat after that, but just seemed like this is a team that has just lost steam as the year's gone on, Aaron. And I mean, they have some toughness and they have some talent. Just feels like a team that should be better than they are. I mean, they had to really – I mean, they showed their toughness. They're losing 9-2 to BC and come back and win that last game. But you shouldn't go to Notre Dame and lose that series, especially when Pat Connaughton walks 8 guys and strikes out nobody. It's just a really funky team. I can't figure Clemson out.
No, they're – exactly. I feel the same way. I don't get those guys. And I wrote them off on Saturday when they were down 9-2. I think I even tweeted – I gave them a TFCO, thanks for coming out, on Twitter. Right before they came back. So, hey, give those guys credit. They didn't roll over. I mean, 9-2? Are you serious? 5 runs in the ninth? I mean, kudos to them. They did show some toughness. Let's see how much more they got in them in the conference tournament because they got I think it's a must-win game against Duke. I really do. I think they're on the bubble.
I completely agree. And it's not like they don't have an ace either. You know, Daniel Gossett has been really, really good this year.
Yeah.
I'm stunned that they're on this bubble. And like you said, their resume just – it's just not a good resume here, and it's not encouraging. There's nothing really they can – what are they really hanging their hat on?
2 wins against UNLV when UNLV didn't have Fetty and was just kind of stepping out of conference, going cross-country. I don't know. I don't put a whole lot of stock in those two. 2 wins against Maryland, 2-0 against Maryland. That's really all they got.
Yeah, that was Daniel Gossett's first loss of the season the other day when he lost 3-1 to BC. And I think he's gone 7 innings or more in 8 straight starts. So he's a draft guy. He's got a little bit of, I don't know about helium. He's still only, 165 pounds. He's 185 pounds is what they list him at. He's not an overly physical young man, but I think he has helped his draft stock as I just sent a little draft tidbit in there. Aaron, I've got a lot of Twitter questions before I go, but we've gone a little bit long here. I want to ask you about a couple of West Coast bubble teams. We work our way down, then we'll go to the Twitter questions. We talked about Ball State last week on the Hangout. They're in there at 53, so there's a potential kind of bubbly team if they don't win the MAC.
Yeah.
But on the West Coast, Long Beach State and Stanford. the dirtbag are 47. Boy, Stanford takes a 16-spot tumble in the RPI this weekend, Aaron, despite winning their series, but it was against Washington State, which isn't great in the RPI. Stanford's over 500 now, 26-23. They've got tremendous strength of schedule, but at 13-14 in the league with a series left against Utah this weekend, feels like Stanford probably needs to win out, get to 30 wins. And so even if the RPI falls into the 50s there, do you think Stanford still gets in if they're 16-14 in the league, 30-23 overall, and would finish strong?
Yes. In that case, yes. For what it's for, the RPI needs report says Stanford will still finish in the top 45 if it wins out, if it wins those last four games. So that means they might even have a little bit of wiggle room if let's say they win the Utah series but don't sweep it. Probably, you know, get to 29 wins, probably still finish in the 45 to 50 range, I would imagine. I'm not an RPI math expert, but that I would guess.
I guess because those Utah games are on the road, right. The RPI wouldn't take as big of a tumble. But that surprises me, considering Utah's RPI is brutal.
Yeah, and they're Utah 16-33. So if you're talking about that opponent's winning percentage being half the formula, you know that takes a chunk right there. Stanford is last 3 weeks they've won series. You know, two on the road at UCLA, at Arizona. They have a big series win against Arizona State to hang their hats on, and Oregon. They won two out of three again. So, and Kansas. So they've got a few, you know, solid series wins here. They have the strength of schedule. Yeah, I think if they can even get to just 29 wins, that'll be enough. Beat Pacific midweek.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I like the way Stanford's trending, and that they're finally hitting. Austin Slater's had a big year. Zach Hoffpower, as you wrote about, Friday the Football Player, has brought some physicality and some pop to their lineup. He's almost slugging 500. I mean, they have three guys slugging 479 or more. I don't know how many teams have that. But the great Blandino's up to 10 home runs now. They've got DeKroger back hitting a little bit. Wayne Taylor has finally started to hit. So it looks like Coach Garko has woken his bat up a little bit. And then the veteran thumb and left-hander, my favorite Hogan's Hero reference, John Major Hochstadter, has started to come on a little bit here. So feels like Stanford's a better team now than it was early in the season, too.
Yeah, and that was a key point I thought that Mark Marquess made when I spoke to him last week was, yeah, our schedule was really tough early. That's part of it. But the other part is we are just playing better now than we were then. And the starting pitching, you know, the big part of it, having that settled with Cal Quantrill and Hochstadter especially. And, you know, the position players, all those guys you mentioned, you're exactly right. You hit on it. Those are the guys that have, you know, kind of led the way here. So last week I was waffling on Stanford. I think, you know, I wasn't quite convicted. I'm still not 100% there, but I think if they beat Pacific midweek, take two out of three at Utah, I think they're in.
I agree. Aaron, last couple RPI questions I had for you. With Long Beach State, which they announced on them. Long Beach State, San Diego State, like those Mountain West teams. What do you feel about those Mountain West clubs and their chances of at-large pitching? You have UNLV at 26. Before UNLV seems like they really stumbled down the stretch post-Fetty injury. San Diego State, New Mexico, both in the 50s. What's the Mountain West's outlook?
Well, I think UNLV is safe. I mean, with that RPI, with their, you know, their non-conference schedule, I think going to Nebraska, they're 5-1 against New Mexico this year. Even this weekend, they rebounded to sweep Nevada. I think they're probably in fine shape. I think they even got the number one seed in the conference tournament. New Mexico could be in some trouble now because they didn't take care of business this weekend against Air Force. I think they really had to sweep Air Force, and they didn't. They lost the middle game, so that hurts them in the RPI. And they don't have the outright conference tournament or regular season conference championship to hang their hats on like they had last year. Last year they got in. I think they were 50 or 51, and they got in. And part of that was because they dominated the league in the regular season. They won it going away. This year they haven't done that. So right now I think I'm going to move New Mexico to the bubble out category. And I might have the Aztecs in better shape at this point than New Mexico. I mean, it's New Mexico's. I mean, San Diego State is right on the bubble too. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's, you know, but San Diego State's a few spots higher in the RPI. They got that series win against Irvine, which I like. You know, they beat UNLV a couple of weeks ago, 2 out of 3. I mean, I don't know. They're not a slam dunk, but right now I think they're they also have a series win against West Virginia early on, which helps. So I think we got a little bit more quality on their resume than New Mexico has.
That league is really tough to sort out, Aaron. And it just feels like it's so much more up in the air, I mean, than usual. I mean, Western Carolina is at 40. Western Carolina won the Southern Conference regular season. They're at 40 in the RPI. You feel like Western Carolina is pretty safe, right?
Yeah, they're a lock. Take it to the bank. Now they got the regular season championship to go with a decent RPI. Yeah, they're in.
Pepperdine the same, winning the West Coast Conference.
I wouldn't call them a lock.
Okay.
But I think they're probably in.
All right. Well, I think we've hit on most of those teams. Let's go to the Twitter machine. I'll ask you this question as well. I'll answer it too. Someone, James asks at Ouch14, is there someone you consider a favorite at number one overall for the Astros, or is it pretty much even? I would say, Aaron, if Carlos Rodon is signable and it's not a crazy signability number, I think that he would go first. If it's a bigger signability, if it's a tougher signability for him than Brady Aiken, I think they would be comfortable going Brady Aiken. I don't know if you have an opinion on that or not.
I don't know what the Astros are thinking, but you're from what you've been able to gather, and you know, from what we know about those guys, I think that's a great analysis. I agree with you. I think you know, we still have Aiken number one on our board, and I think a lot of teams probably do. But you know, Rodon's track record is what it is. You know, he's close to the big leagues. I mean, you could put him up there tomorrow, and he'd be fine. You know, at least he'd be able to get out. I mean, he'd have, you know, there's a little bit of a learning curve, you know, of course, but he's close is the point.
Made it close by not having a great year. That's the bottom line.
Yep.
He hasn't had a bad year, but he hasn't had a great year. He's basically had, as we looked at the numbers, pretty much the same year that Garrett Cole had in 2011, Aaron. And in fact, in a lot of ways, he's had a better year than Cole.
Right.
So before people bag on him too much, Garrett Cole, we were bagging on Garrett Cole that whole year. I mean, like, I was in the Trevor Bauer will be better camp 3 years ago because I just didn't understand why Cole was having such a bad year that year. But certainly to this point in their big league careers, Garrett Cole has been a lot better. So
yeah.
Next question. So thanks for the question, James. Matthew Trueblood, who's at Armside Run with a couple of underscores in there. How high could Max Pentecost climb in the draft? Getting some late buzz, it seems. Aaron, I forget where you had Max Pentecost in last year's Cape Cod League list, but he had buzz last year to be a first rounder, did he not?
Yep. No doubt. He was high on the Cape League list. I think he was a Cape League batting champion, if I'm not mistaken.
This is not like a surprise, in other words. He didn't come out of nowhere.
Right. He was already, you know, he's been a first round candidate, I think.
It's from the day he walked into school. He was a seventh round pick, undrafted out of high school, didn't sign. I remember talking to the Rangers that year. The Rangers thought they had a deal with this guy. You know, something changed the last minute with the Rangers and Max Pentecost. But when you combine athleticism, the catcher spot, and a 422, 477, 626 line, it's the Atlantic Sun Conference. I get it. It's not – there's no – Lynn DiNardo's not walking through that door. This is not the heyday of the Atlantic Sun Conference. Or Chris Sale's not walking through that door. Maybe I should update my Atlantic Sun pitcher reference, Aaron. Chris Sale's not walking through that door, but Max Pentecost has dominated that league. I think he'll be one of their five lock college position players who will go in the first round. Pentecost is one of them. You have Pentecost, Conforto, Bradley Zimmer, Trey Turner, Kyle Schwarber. Those are the five locks. I think A.J. Reed and Casey Gillespie are extremely safe bets, but they're more like Florida State. They're almost a lock as a top 8 national seed. Those guys are almost locked as first round picks, but it's just not universal or consensus. So
that's fair. I agree with you once again.
Good job, Aaron. You're good at that. great pick, boss. We've already interacted with Tucker Blankenship, NC State's number one baseball fan on Twitter, at least to interact with us. We've answered Drew's question at D. Grimm, who asked us national seeds, which teams are locks, which teams could fall out, which teams could play themselves in. Is there a dark horse who could play their way in, Aaron? Like, could Texas Tech be a top 8 national seed if they win the Big 12?
No. You know, and they're 11 in the RPI, so it's not an outlandish question. But not being fourth in the Big 12,
right? Because you had TCU as a dark, not a dark horse, but like as a national seed picture.
Yeah. Last week, I think I had TCU as a national seed. This week, they won't be. When I update stock report today or tomorrow, they'll be replaced.
Houston, do you think Houston could be a top eight national seed with that gaudy number nine RPI if they win the AAC tournament?
I just don't see it because of the conference. Where they finished third in the league, several games back. I don't think so. I understand they have a great RPI. They have a great non-conference RPI in particular. But no, I they're not a national seed contender. I think they're still on the bubble to be a host. And trying to figure out the last couple of hosts is really challenging because you've got all those SEC teams. And now I feel like LSU is a 3 seed in the SEC tournament. We had them out last week. They feel like they should be back in as a host. Liberty's out, I think, as a host after losing that series to Radford.
Rough loss for the Flames.
Yeah. But then you got Louisville. I mean, can you really give Houston a host over Louisville when, the Cardinals won that league and won the head-to-head series in a sweep? Yeah, I mean, so I know Houston's got the RPI edge, but will both those teams get hosts? I don't know. If I got to pick one of them, I think I'm taking the Cardinals.
I got to say, I completely don't understand how Houston's RPI is so high. I know they've won a lot of games, but their non-conference schedule is similar to – aren't their top 50 and top 100 lines pretty similar to Louisiana Lafayette's?
I think it's a little better than that. Houston's 8-8 against the top 50.
They are 41-14. That's how their RPI is. So that's the bottom line, right?
Well, I mean, that's part of it. They're 15.
All those non-conference series against the games against Rice, they've won.
They're 15-4 on the road, which really helps.
Yeah,
and that's also a reason Louisiana Lafayette is where it is, because they've won a lot of road games. But Houston does have more quality wins than Lafayette. I mean, they're 8-8 against top 50, and they're 16-9 against the top 100. So they've got more high-end wins. Going to the West Coast early, those teams turned out, USC and UCLA weren't great, but and they lost to Pepperdine. So, I mean, but they were on the West Coast, and traveling helps. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those teams where it feels like their RPI is higher than it should be. But that said, they're pretty good.
Though, that said, I mean, we have all kinds of respect for that team and that program. So,
yeah,
great. That's a great one. Aaron, last question. Mike Rooney, Runes of ESPNU, former Arizona State coach, assistant coach. Rune says, I think AJ Reed should be National Player of the Year if he didn't pitch this year. Hashtag dominance.
Maybe.
I think he's got a very strong case, Aaron. Who else is even in the National Player of the Year mix? I know I'm kind of putting you on the top of your head here, but outside of AJ Reed, who's even in that mix?
Nola. For me, it's a two-man race between Nola and Reed.
What about our boy Kyle Freeland?
Kyle
Freeland had the best year of any pitcher in the country, including Nola.
Maybe you're right. Yeah, that's another good one to put on the short list there. You're right, because I mean, especially since he's helped them win their league, and he's been such a huge part of their success out there.
I know it's the Missouri Valley and not the SEC. So you see Nola with that 1.42 ERA in the SEC and combining on 6 shutouts. That's pretty ridiculous, but I feel like the same thing can be said of Kyle Freeland. The strikeout walk numbers are ridiculous. If I were in the decision sciences department of some team, I don't like to say, but if you're crunching numbers, Kyle Freeland has the best numbers in college baseball. Although you do have to put him through the translator, of the Missouri Valley Conference. So he has a higher ERA than Nola, but he has a 1.22-9 strikeout to walk.
Yeah, that's bonkers.
It's bonkers, but yeah, I mean, I feel like AJ Reed is. It's hard to take that away from him. Of being, I don't want to be anticlimactic, but I can't think of anybody who else who's in his range of college player of the year, right?
No, I mean, like Rune said, even if he didn't pitch, I mean, the hitting line alone, and the guy's 10-2 as a Friday starter in the SEC, so that that's pretty good also. But for God's sakes, he's got 23 home runs now, John, 70 RBIs. I mean, 1280 ops, leads the nation, I think, still in ops.
He's putting up Beezer bat numbers on a BB Core world.
Oh, it's crazy. It's exactly right. When you consider the context of this era, I mean, John, how many guys over the last 20 years have had a season as good as this? You know, think of a two-way guy who's made this kind of an impact both ways. It's come on, it's crazy.
It's hard to imagine. I mean, like Brad Wilkerson, 98, had that kind of a year as a two-way guy. I'm trying to think of others.
But relative to his era context, his offensive numbers don't hold a candle to A.J. Reed's.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what his pitching numbers were. 1998 was a -5 bat season. So, yes, you're, in terms of the context offensively, you're absolutely right. He does not hold a candle because he had similar – I don't think he hit 30 home runs that year, but Brad Wilkerson did hit a lot of home runs that year. I will say one difference is that he took – I mean, he had a little bit better team around him because they had – I believe they had David Eckstein and Mark Ellis on that 1998 Florida team. They may have both been on. I think the infield was Tamargo at short, John Tamargo Jr. at short, Eckstein at second, Mark Ellis at third, and Brad Wilkerson at first base when he didn't pitch. But I believe that I have to look up Brad Wilkerson's numbers that year. And, of course, he's from Kentucky, which always makes me chuckle at the comparison of those two guys. Brad Wilkerson that year, I have his numbers here. He hit .347 with 23 home runs, so his numbers do not hold a candle. He's being outslugged by A.J. Reed right now. A.J. Reed, .788 slugging. Wilkerson, .743. Wilkerson did have, this is not a typo, Wilkerson did have 85 walks that year, Aaron,
ooh,
which is unfathomable. I'm looking at the NCAA's official website. And then he was 10-5 with a .498 ERA in that very offensive year, but he led the Gators with 113 innings. Yeah. So they're comparable, but I think you're right. I think you have to give the edge statistically to A.J. Reed, which is pretty amazing because when I think of great two-way seasons where guys started, I usually think of Brad Wilkerson. I'm sure there are others, but I usually think of Brad Wilkerson. If you have another one, email it into us at johnmanuel@baseballamerica.com or aaronfitt@baseballamerica.com. Or tweet it at us. He's at Aaron Fitt, BA. I'm at John Manuel, BA. Great long podcast, Aaron. I'm going to let you go. We want people to remember, don't forget BA's draft offer. Subscribe now and receive one extra month of access with any premium content subscription. That's at baseballamerica.com/subscribe. And this podcast is powered by Louisville Slugger. Leave your mark with the attack, raid, and assault bat lineup this season. Stronger, lighter, farther, Louisville Slugger. Aaron, you are going to, like we said, Birmingham later in the week. Hoover, I should say. I'll be out at the ACC tournament at Greensboro, at least for one game, if not more, and all kinds of draft coverage coming up this weekend, too. And then, Aaron, what regional – we kind of know where – what regional do you think you're going to wind up at in person? Where do you think you'll wind up, Aaron?
You know, I really don't know. I really don't. I mean, certainly, you know, Charlottesville and Columbia will be easily drivable. Those will be options. But, you know, I kind of like to – I've got a couple of things I'm kicking around too. I mean, we need to get down to Lafayette. We need to get to, you know, some random place like that I haven't been to before, where, you know, Cal Poly would be cool to go for a regional. I don't know. We'll have to look at the brackets and see how it goes.
Cal Poly would be pretty cool to go to a regional, Aaron, just because Morro Bay, you know, my fondness for Morro Bay. I mean, take some pictures out by the rock. Get a piece of the rock out in Morro Bay, Aaron. That place, the natural beauty of Morro Bay won me over. I was pretty impressed. So I advocate that, but of course, never been to Baggett Stadium, so who knows? I don't think I will wind up being at a regional this year unless something changes in the next couple of days. But I think I'll be spending some family time.
You got the draft. You're going up to New Jersey, right, for the draft show the day before regionals.
I will be on the draft show. Is that before regionals? No, regionals are Memorial Day weekend. The draft is super regional weekend, Thursday the 5th. So. I look at my schedule, the regionals start May 30th. So the BA 500 is what I'll be cranking out that week. So that takes up enough time. So hope to be at a regional, but I'm not sure but I haven't gotten that call yet. So contact your local cable provider who does the Bases Loaded and tell them you want John Manuel to work a regional on your television. That would be I'd appreciate the help. All right, Aaron, great podcast, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the next Baseball America College Podcast. So long, everybody.